Take your Bibles, if you will, to Ecclesiastes chapter 2. I can remember many years ago going on a missions trip to Mexico. And that was when Matt Shields was still there and planting several churches. One night he took us to a restaurant. You talk about authentic Mexican food right there in Zacatecas, Mexico. That was authentic Mexican food. And it was good. But I remember one particular thing about this restaurant. In the middle of this probably 10 or 12-foot table, maybe 15-foot table, they had all these different salsas or sauces that were in the middle. A lot of different colors, different textures. And I was sitting there studying them, trying to figure out which one was which without asking him necessarily. And then one of his boys started taunting me, "Are you going to try every single one of those?" And I thought, no, I don't think I want to try every single one of those. But I succumbed to the pressure. And I started trying each one. Some were hot, some were very, very hot. And I couldn't tell you what the other ones were. I couldn't taste anything after that, all right? But they were all good. So I had studied them, and ultimately I tried them. Up until now, the preacher in Ecclesiastes had been studying things. He was using his mind to try to find out the meaning of life and whether or not life was going to be futile or whether it was going to be worth living. He had used his mental acuity, and it had, in a sense, all been in a laboratory up until now. And it was a thesis. But now he was going to do a field test. He was going to really exercise his desire to find out the meaning of life by trying out different things. Have you ever heard of the phrase hedonism? It dates all the way back to the ancient Greek world, and it was really a Greek word for pleasure. The philosophy of hedonism is believed to have first been taught by somebody by the name of Aristippus of Cyrene, and he was a student of Socrates. Now, this teaching of hedonism just means that the meaning of life is self-pleasure, okay? Finding pleasure. So pleasure should be the ultimate pursuit of mankind. So whatever you need to do out to go out there to find self-gratification, go and do it. But Aristippus's ideas were not really the prevailing thought of his time. And they were not made popular until one of his students, his most famous student, whose name was Epicurus. He brought it into the mainstream. And Epicurus taught that there is no afterlife, so you have to enjoy pleasure. And the ultimate end is through your self-fulfillment, all right? Just finding pleasure in whatever it is that you're doing. Now, he did teach that greater pleasure could be found if you put off instant gratification, all right? But ultimately, this idea was one that Paul argued against in Acts chapter 17. There was others in that same time that were teaching some things, but yet 900 years before then, Solomon had decided to become a hedonist. He was going to try to fulfill himself with pleasure. He chose to make his own personal happiness and fulfillment his chief end in life. I think that's the way that a lot of people are living today. And the honest truth is, even for the believer, there's a temptation to live for self rather than living for the glory of God. You look at verse 1 of chapter 2 with me, when Solomon says, "I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth, therefore, and enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity." Now, it's interesting, here in the beginning, he announces his results, the results of his test. It's as if he were writing a paper, and he's giving the very conclusion at the beginning of the paper, and then he's going to expound on it. But don't think that he was prejudging. He's just telling you the results of his test, of his experiment. Look at that word, prove. It carries the idea of testing. And he is going to methodically test these different things. Not just think about it like he had with the creation or nature and with mankind. But now he was really taking it to the bench and doing a real test of these things. It's a comprehensive experiment. I won't have a raise of hands, but I wonder how many of you ever had to do a dissection when you were in school. I heard about a frog who just fell in love and found out that this young lady was going to get to know him better than anyone ever had. And he was excited. He was thinking, she's going to kiss me. I'm going to turn into a prince. And finally asked somebody, when am I going to get to know her? And they said, about 2 o'clock tomorrow in biology class. All right. And so that's not the way he was thinking he wanted to get known. But he was going to get known. Is a comprehensive test. In verses 2 through 8, he lists all of these different pleasures that he tried, and we're going to look at some of them. And then in verses 9 through 11, he kind of reflects on what he learns from this experiment. So let's look again at verse 1. He said, I said in my heart, go to now, and I will prove thee with mirth. Mirth, he carries the idea of comedy, of laughter. Let me tell you just now, I believe about most comedy that I have been exposed to, which is limited, but it's filthy. In either its language or in the innuendos or in the outright lewdness of the jokes. But despite the vulgarity of the comedy of our day, people are still looking for something to anesthetize their lives, their mundane lives. They're looking for something to get rid of the mundaneness of their lives. So when they're bored, they look for something to give them a laugh, something like a sitcom, something like maybe a funny video clip on YouTube or some social media thing. But they're looking for something that is going to help break up the mundaneness of their life. You know, Solomon didn't have YouTube, but he had court jesters. He had different things to try to make him laugh. You know, he found something out. It failed to give him lasting fulfillment. Look at verse 2. This is his conclusion. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? Now here, mad's not referring to be out of your mind the way we might use the word today, but it carries this idea of making a mockery of something. And so to honor God, we ought to, whether our laughter or looking for entertainment in some way, it ought to ought to glorify God. It shouldn't come at someone else's expense. He's saying, listen, a mockery is, he's looking for that, but there's no fulfillment in that. And so what is he saying? He's saying when it comes to the fulfillment of life, trying to find fulfillment, he says that laughter turns out to be a hollow experience. He's saying that's not fulfillment. It may break up the monotony. It may give you a diversion for a moment, but when you're done, you're still left with the same life you had before you got started. And what he's saying is that humor is a short-term anesthesia for the monotony of life, but it's that life under the sun. It can't be dispelled with mirth. And so the next pleasure that he tried was alcohol. Now, I'd like to come back to this at some point. I'm not going to do an entire study on alcohol tonight, but I want you to understand the way that the word usage is given here, he is really abusing it. Now, I don't go for any kind of alcoholic drinking, all right? I believe the Bible is clear that we ought to be teetotalers. We ought to abstain completely. But he said, listen, I'm going to pursue inebriation to try to find fulfillment. And really what he's looking for is escape. I'm going to try to escape the mundaneness of this life and try to find meaning in something else. It's incredible what people will do to try to fill that God void in their lives. And for some, it's alcohol. It's not mentioned here in this list, but I would put drug use in that. Those things that are going to cause us to be those narcotics that take us out of our right mind, our right thinking, and put us in a place where we cannot think right. And so whether that's the abuse of prescription drugs or narcotics or illegal drugs, I'm just saying there is no satisfaction in that. You know what I find is that people start out thinking that they have control over that. But you know what happens, just like so many other sins, before they're done, it has control of them. And what they thought they could handle is handling them. And Solomon is saying, listen, I did these things. I was abusing alcohol. I was going out of my mind. And yet I still could not find satisfaction. And he tried several other things. You might want to underline all the different things that he tries. I'm going to read verses 3 through 8, and then we'll kind of summarize them at the end. He says in verse 3, I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom. Now, we're going to get back to this idea of wisdom, okay? This is not godly wisdom that is found in the wisdom poetry of the Bible. True wisdom, the beginning of wisdom is what? The fear of God. That's exactly right. What does Solomon say over and over and over again? Under the sun, he's saying in this life, in this world, without God, there is another kind of wisdom. It's the prevailing wisdom. And he says, I am going according to what people believe is going to bring satisfaction. He says, I have acquainted my heart with wisdom and to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. You see, he is setting the stage again. He is saying, this is not right thinking. If I could say it in our vernacular today, this is not biblical thinking. This is manly or fleshly or worldly thinking. And so he says in verse 4, I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards. And I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens and had servants born in my house. Also, I had great possessions of all great and small cattle, above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold, the peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments and all that of sorts. Now, I'll tell you, most people in that day could not carry out the experiment that Solomon was doing. Why is that? They didn't have the resources. And it's so odd to me to think that a man that had such great wisdom could not find purpose in life, that he would have such folly in his life. And yet everything on this list, look at it, it's pluralized. It means he just didn't do it once. He's doing it over and over again. He had all this cattle. He built all these buildings. He did all these things. It wasn't just I'll try it once and see if it works. It was, I'm going to continue pursuing all these different things, hoping to find life satisfaction. So what does he talk about here? What is he doing? He's talking about looking for the answer to life, for purpose, for meaning, in entertainment, talking about mirth when you start back there, in alcohol, or those things that skew our thinking or cause us to go out of the way, if you will. He's looking at construction projects. You know, it's interesting to me, as I was reading about this, I was thinking about how men identify themselves. We identify ourselves with what we do. We find meaning in that. Most men, when you go up, you say, hey, who are you? They don't say, well, I'm the husband of Missy Davidson, and I'm the father, and list my children out. We say, I'm the pastor of Maranatha Baptist Church, or I do this, or this is what I do. And that's how men are. Women may be less so, but we still find our identification oftentimes in what we do. And so Solomon is saying, listen, I'm going to be a builder. I'm gonna try entertainment. I'm going to try these construction projects. Then he moves on to horticulture. Then he tries hydrology, this water and moving the water around, animal husbandry, musicology. He's taking chorale and these instrumental studies. You know, if I were to put it all another way, I would say this. He's living like a king. Have you ever heard that phrase? Well, they're living large. You're living like a king. And that's what he's doing. He's doing all these different things. I want to read verses 9 through 11. What was his answer to that? He said, so I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me, and whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. Like I said, it sounds strange for us to hear him say that his wisdom stayed with him. Now, there's no way that he could possibly be talking about the kind of wisdom that begins with God, because this is antithetical to the teachings that God had given even the Jewish people of his day, okay? So what he's talking about embracing worldly wisdom, that which is wrong thinking. And if we're not careful, we will fall, even as believers today, into that same line of wrong thinking. To say, listen, I can find fulfillment in going out and building something. I can find fulfillment in life going out and growing something out in the garden. So what was his test result? You know, what happens to people that pursue pleasure as the first and foremost appetite of their life? Well, you probably know it already. Based on what happens to you and I when we start pursuing our pleasures instead of living for God. Because I'll be honest with you, we have just as much opportunity as Solomon. Now, back in Solomon's day, he's really the only one that could have performed this kind of test. He's the only one that had those kind of resources. But I want you to think about this. We live in better homes than Solomon did. You sleep in a more comfortable bed than Solomon did. You have something called conditioned air, which means when you're cold, you can turn up the heat, and when you're hot, you can turn down the air conditioner. Solomon could never even dream of something like that. You can buy almost anything you want from anywhere in the world and have it delivered to your doorstep. Is all the riches Solomon had, that would have been a fairy tale to him. We have the ability to listen to professional musicians anytime we want by simply pressing a button. I'm just telling you that those are comforts and things that Solomon could not even imagine. But let me talk about sensuality for just a moment, because he touches on that. The internet offers an endless supply of novelty, providing what one author called a vast harem for the imagination. And the truth of the matter is, we are living in a day that is godless, that is pursuing pleasure. 2 Timothy 3:4 speaks to this. He says, talking, giving this list of those that have turned away from God, he says, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. Is that not a distinct description of the days in which we are living? Everything is offered to us in this generation. There's nothing that's withheld. Let me ask you this. What satisfies you? Are you satisfied with God? Or are you like Solomon, looking for something more? There's got to be something more out there. But if your view is limited to being under the sun, then you're never going to be satisfied. Do you remember in the beginning of the pandemic, there was an item that was extremely hard to find? It was toilet paper. It's ridiculous. And for the first time in several generations, you could go to the store and the store may not have something as basic as TP. And then, due to the supply chain disruption, there were a lot of other things that started not showing up. I remember we needed to buy some paint for something around the church here. And we had been using Sherwin-Williams, and they had a cashmere paint that we've painted about the whole church with. That's just one of their lines. And they didn't have any of that entire line of paint. Now, I'd never been confronted with that. I thought that That's crazy that I could go to the store and not get what I wanted. But for the most part, now we're back to normal. The shelves are stocked, and there's no shortage of anything except contentment and happiness or joy, fulfillment. I ran across this illustration that I thought was pretty good. It talks about Tom Brady, who played professional football. He was asked this question on 60 Minutes. He had just quarterbacked the New England Patriots at this time to their third Super Bowl. And he said, why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still think there's something greater out there for me? I mean, maybe a lot of people would say, hey, man, this is what it is. He said, I reached my goal, my dream, my life. Me, I think it's got to be more than this. I mean, this can't be what it's all cracked up to be. When the interviewer asked, what is the answer? Brady could only say, I wish I knew. I wish I knew. There's something that those even that have achieved great things in the eyes of the world still understand is not fulfilling. Still trying to fill that void. You know what happens, unfortunately, is that dissatisfaction with life, what does it do? For many people, they turn their back on God. You know what that dissatisfaction with life ought to turn us towards God. It tells us we are made for something more. That life isn't futile. You see, for the believer, the child of God, those things that Solomon was pursuing can be great joy and satisfaction for the believer. There's nothing wrong with enjoying godly entertainment. Now, those things that are ungodly are still ungodly, all right? So I'm not suggesting that there's some good use for alcohol. But if you want to build something and you build it for the glory of God, then there's great achievement in that as long as it's for His glory. And so those same things can bring joy. But it's not when we're pursuing for our self-gratification, but it's for God's glorification. That is what we ought to be pursuing. And so when we pursue God rather than our own desires, when we get saved, something amazing happens. Those things that used to be a vanity and a vexation of spirit can be a source of pleasure, but not in an ungodly sense, because we recognize that God is the giver of all good things. And so those things that failed to satisfy help us glorify God by recognizing who He is and what He gives us. Now, I'm not talking about the foolish and sinful pleasures, the sensuality, not those things, obviously. But the list that He gives, whether it's building or horticulture or enjoying godly music, all those things can bring God glory and can bring fulfillment for the Christian who is doing it for His pleasure and not our own. And so, first of all, we need to find our satisfaction in the Lord. And then secondly, what we do ought to be for His glory and not our own. What's that look like in your life? Are you living a life just searching and hoping to find something that is going to bring life satisfaction? Or are you sitting there like Solomon, thinking, boy, life is just futile. There's nothing to it. Well, my friends, Jesus is the answer. And when you have the Lord, He brings the abundant life. And those things that we do for His glory will bring us joy and satisfaction. I hope you see that in your life as well.